Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague at Playful Humans. You can find us at playfulhumans.com. I made it very difficult for you to find. There's also a playfulness quiz. If you want to find out your playful personality style, go to playfulhumans.com/quiz. There's also a burnout quiz. You can see whether you're well done, extra crispy, see how burnout you are and how much more fun you need in your life. And we're going to do that with Stephen Morgan this week. Find him at stephenmorgan.wales. He's a stand-up comedian and improv artist. Performer?
Yeah, why not?
Performer. We'll figure it out here in a second. We're going to make it up as we go along. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast. We like to start with the joke of the week here on the Playful Humans podcast. The joke of the week this week is brought to you by passwords. My dad's password is Mickey, Minnie, Goofy, Donald, Pluto, Huey, Louie, Dewey, Dublin. Because the password instructions told him to put 18 characters and one capital.
Hey.
Do you have a joke for us?
All right. I do have one. Why did the Scandinavian Navy... Oh, God, I've messed it up, haven't I? Oh, my goodness. Oh, you got to love that.
Well, sir, I've got a penalty. So,
did I mention I do comedy, right? Yeah. Okay. Are we started going again, or are we just...
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Joke for us?
Ooh. I do have a joke for you. Why... to the Swedish Navy have barcodes on the side of their ships?
I don't know.
Well, it's so they can Scandinavian.
Yes.
There you go.
All right. I feel like that was off to a perfect start, and that's why we do the joke of the week, is it puts us in the perfect mood to have a great conversation. My first question for you is, with stand-up comedy and improv, did you always do this, or was this like a midlife crisis? You were selling insurance in your cubicle and you were like, no, I'm going to go be an improv artist.
Oh my goodness. I would say, kind of like a combination of the two. Because my entire life I've been involved in various artistic endeavors, but I've always been way too cowardly to just go all in. I am not someone who deals well with, that sort of, feeling of insecurity and, like, you know, I've always done the combination where essentially I work like a job and a half. I'm only 21. This is just how I look.
Me
this
too.
Is just
what happens. I don't,
exactly.
Realized when I said midlife crisis, I was like, I'm really reading into this gray hair here.
No, you nailed it, you know. Yeah, I'm planning to die exactly as long as I've been alive later. So yeah, you got it. But it's a kind of a funny one though, because it's something which for the longest time I kind of like kept this perfect divide between the two, you know, like as if I had this there was the professional me and then there was like the me, the actual me. And I kind of kept those things completely separate. People might find out about one or the other from the different, situations, but I would always like downplay it massively. I'd be like, oh, no, it's no big deal. It's nothing, you know, it's, it's something. And they might find some things and I'll try and just like avoid it. But as I've kind of gone on
so much, I don't want to cut you off, but I have to jump in there. Because I would do the same thing. Even in my 20s, I designed websites for a living, and then I hosted karaoke shows at night and was on the radio and like DJing and stuff. And, and people couldn't really get together. They're like, you mean DJ Romeo that's in the clubs is like programming the Kansas City Chiefs website during the day? Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? But I love that part of it. I loved having kind of a secret persona and part of it. And there is some, I think, benefits definitely financially to having the day job and stuff, but there's also benefits to having this thing that's just for you, that's not monetized and stuff, right?
That's very true. No, absolutely true. Yeah, because you interact with people in the two different worlds essentially, and it's kind of like every time I get that temptation to sort of like, oh, I'm going to go all in on like the comedy, on the improv and everything, and I'll just be talking to a friend of mine who's doing that, and then they'll just be like, oh my god, like it's so hard. I've got to do another corporate booking, and there's just been nothing but terrible in the whole lead up to it, and I'm thinking, ah. Oh, I kind of like the fact that I get to say no to these and can actually sort of sidestep them. And simultaneously, I got people working with me in like, my day job. And it's like, they're working ridiculous hours. They are, you try to have a conversation with them about anything that is not related to work. And it's like, there's a bit of a silence. And then something like, have you seen this TV show? And that's like the extent of where the kind of connection comes. And just those two moments are the moments where I'm kind of like, I think I'm an in-between person. I don't know if I got it in me to be in the categories either side.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's different levels that people misunderstand a little bit, or maybe they look down on. And sometimes I even struggle with where there's sort of this bravado and sometimes pride in being a starving artist too, of like, no, I'm doing the work, I'm living this life, and I'm going to be, you know, on the road or grinding it out in clubs or something like that and making no money to try to pay your dues or something. Obviously everybody wants to be the hugest, biggest stars, and there's the people that are millionaires from doing what they do. But I think people miss this life of, I can do this as a vocation, something that I love, or this like middle class of performers is what I call it, where you can actually, you know, have a day job or monetize the thing with corporate gigs and stuff. And nobody ever really knows who you are. You're not world famous, but you can make six figures doing what you love. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that either.
That is exactly it. And I do think that the younger, it's funny, that story again has a lot of parallels to my own life and experience. So, because I definitely think when I was younger, a big part of the reason I did keep such a divide between them was because I was actually embarrassed to have that relative stability from having the day job. I was like, I feel like I'm a phony in some sort of way because I'm doing this sort of thing. I think that was it. But originally, my passion, and I was in bands, and I was like trying to make it in music. And so at that time as well, I do feel like in the musical world there is a lot more about, like, you know, you as almost like as a brand, I guess it's a bit like extreme to talk about it that way, but you're really trying to create a persona beyond anything. It's like on every single level, that's how you want someone to see you. And then I kind of reached that age where the hair started going a bit gray, and I was like, and also we were making electronic music, and I don't think that's like the, I had to make this decision at some point. It's like, I can't really get away with being like the upstart anymore. And it was liberating, because then I was just
I felt
like,
that about being a DJ in the club too. Like, there's not a whole lot of cool 40-year-old DJs. It turns out it wasn't smart enough, Steven. You just put like a marshmallow on your head or a smiley face and nobody can see your gray hair and bald head.
No, that is it. I mean, you do get artists who do that. Like, I mean, Shabazz Palace's hip-hop artists, I remember for the longest time, they were like these old... for the longest time, no one knew who they were. Jungle, I think, did the same thing. And you knew that it was just... Well, I knew. It was just because it was like, you're older, aren't you? You're just trying to create mystique, because you're like, as soon as people see you, they're going to be like, hey, old man, what are you doing?
I think a lot of that is head trash and our own baggage and stuff too. But these are the things that I love sharing, because they swirl around for all of us. And you're like, okay, well, am I not going to make it as a musician, or did I not make it? Or am I getting too old to keep trying? And I think those things don't exist. They're in your own head. But at some point, you do also have to make logical decisions about paying your bills, or if you want to date someone and things like that too, be able to not be a dependent of somebody else.
Yeah, that's it. Because of course, it's like, as soon as your life changes, and that's the other thing as well, is you look at the people who are doing this on that professional level in anything that's public facing, where they are themselves, like the focus of it all, that's like overwhelming on every single level. And the level of judgment as well for those people. I mean, someone who I was in a comedy group with, she basically recently left because of her fame getting too much, which is very good for her. She's an amazing person too. But, you know, I look at what she's doing and I'm kind of like, yeah, you go. But at the same time, I'm also a bit like, damn, like, what are these comments? That some, you know, mostly positive, but a few of them you're just like, what the hell, man? That's a bit much. And that's Yeah, and that's sort of and I am exactly the sort of shallow, thin-skinned person who would absolutely be reading those things, and I might see 100 positive ones and one negative one, and I'd be going to bed at night going, oh, I'm a failure.
It has to catch you at the wrong time. You know, we all have that imposter syndrome, and it all creeps up, and most days you're like, you know what, I'm great, I got this, I could do this, I'm feeling good, and then there's that one day or that one comment that hits a little too close to home, and you're just like, they got me. Oh, they hit me. I was dodging these bullets like the Matrix, and then one clip.
That's absolutely it. And, you know, and again, the age thing, of course, helps because your perspective and, you just reach a point where you don't care about it as much. But like you said, it's when there's just one now and again that just kind of like you just look at it and maybe you're also feeling a bit tired and run down and maybe your ego is taking a bit of a dent and you're just like, good point.
You do a show and nobody shows up or whatever, and then you see the comments like and all that kind of stuff will just get you over time. But that's okay. I think that's personal growth. That's part of being alive and being human, is we're going to have good days and bad days, and we're going to have good shows and bad shows. And the more you do it, the more you realize that that has nothing to do with you. I've seen terrible podcasts that I've done go viral and you're like, why that one? And then you do a really good one and it gets crickets and you're like, all right, that's the way life is. But I wanted to ask you how you moved from music to comedy.
I mean, so that was actually part of this process of getting to that age where I was like, I don't know if music's going to do it for me. And also, timing wise, I think there was a more serious thing that the most successful band that I was in was based in London in the UK. And then I moved to Brisbane in Australia, which is a long way away. And that was logistically kind of the end of that.
On Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's it. But I did, when I first got there, I was, I had a bit of that inertia of like my UK life and just like, okay, I'm just going to pick up the same things I did before, but I'm just going to do them here. I quickly kind of realized as well, like when I met some people and tried something new, I was just like, I'm just not feeling this. This is just, I had something really good and really nice and it came to a natural conclusion, but I'm just like, this is just not doing it for me anymore. I'm just not feeling that same kind of buzz and drive from it. And so, I always had that thing of being like class clown or the person who couldn't take things seriously enough. And so I just thought, look, I've always wanted to do comedy. I've always wanted to kind of like give it a try. I'm now like thousands of kilometers away from the nearest person that I know. So this is a good opportunity because hopefully they'll never hear about it if it goes badly. And so I did, and I threw myself into it and I loved it. And, again, being in like a completely different place gave me a lot of time to really sort of go hard with it because it takes a lot of evenings, takes a lot of preparation. It's a very overwhelming thing to do. That was the point, and I haven't really looked back since.
Awesome. I have three questions for you here. I'm going to come back to the comedy, and then I want to talk about improv, but first, I want to ask you, what made you move halfway across the world?
I mean, that was an ex of mine. She was a scientist and she got a job at the, what she did was pretty specialized. So there were only like a handful of places in the world she could really work. And for me, I was always of the opinion that I was like, if I live outside of my home country, I'm sure it'll be like an experience that I want to do. I'm not quite sure why. I'm not quite sure what I'll get out of it, but I kind of just want to do it. And so I did. And I haven't moved back to my home country since, and it's been over 10 years. So I think it was the right decision to make.
Amazing. I find that exploration a different kind of leap too. Like you said, you have to leave everything behind in those comfort zones behind, but also it gives you that chance to reinvent yourself. And that's an interesting life choice as well. And playful. You get to go explore and have fun and learn new things.
Exactly. Yeah, it unlocks something within you, which sometimes you kind of you lose sight of, especially if you're in a place for a long time, because over time, naturally, you get more commitments, some of them of which are good and natural and, are engaging. But some of them, it's just, again, through inertia, just because it's like, I do this thing and I'm going to keep doing this thing because it's the thing that I do. And not really questioning it and not really sort of saying to yourself, am I still getting something out of this? Because I technically could, turn this off overnight. I mean, I'm not talking about kids because that would be terrible. But I mean, like if it's something like a hobby or something like that. So yeah, it was like that, a really liberating thing where you're just like, damn, I don't have any commitments. I mean, like I got to find a job, but like, wow, this is crazy. And I cannot remember the last time I felt like this.
I love that. And that's actually deep insight. It feels like you have explored that a little bit, which is cool. So let's switch back to the comedy. Which part of it is most exciting for you? The performing, the writing, or just the, you know, collaborating with other people? What is it about comedy that makes it fun for you?
It's a really good question, actually. And I think out of those three, two of them definitely are my favorite. And that is the performing and the collaborating with others. I am not a planner. I am not a good person at sitting down and just getting things done and having things in advance, which is why also I teach and I perform a lot of improv as well. That's kind of like my specialty at this point. And it's because self-judging or overthinking or all of these sorts of things. But when I'm in the moment, when there's nothing to kind of go up against, I'm at my best. And also with one of the things that I really learned about myself during making music as well, is I had a sort of similar thing, is I realized that when I'm making music, because of course a lot of artistic expression, you see overlaps in some of the ways that it works, is I realized that like when I'm trying to write something, just me doing it myself, I'm not great. I kind of, again, have that same sort of like moment where I'm like, oh no, that's not good enough. I'll try that. No. And spend like an evening and then get very frustrated. But how that worked best was the fact that we had like one guy who was incredibly prolific. He couldn't like write songs, but he would be like, hey, check this out. And he'd like send over a 30-second loop of something he'd done. And then I would be so like blown away by it. And then like hours later, I've just turned it into this like, you know, huge behemoth of a thing. But just having that starting point just created something inside me that I couldn't do myself. But when someone else gave it to me, I was like, let's go.
Yeah, I think that's so great. And there's a bunch there for creativity that I want to dive into.
All right. Yeah.
I think it's interesting because I'm very much a do it live person. I started as live DJ and karaoke and then went to radio where you basically do it all live. There was some ways to voice track and record, and I didn't find that as fun. And then I like figured out that I love live performance so much because you can read the room, but there's also that moment of is go time. Something is going to happen. You can't procrastinate. You can't overthink it and stuff anymore. And a lot of times, you know, you get 80% of that magic in the first take anyway, or that performance. And when you get stuck in performing the same song or the same joke over and over again, you might be able to get it from 80% to 100 or 99, but the sheer amount of effort and repetitions and stuff kind of suck the fun out of it for me. And it sounds like you're on the same page there too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like some people I think as well are perhaps, you know, good at being able to recreate that energy to find that sort of thing. But I'm the sort of person who, when I meet up with people, you know, and if I'm in a bad mood, they're going to know it within like 6 seconds, not because I'm going to do anything bad, but they're just going to see my face. They're going to see my vibes and they're just going to be like, okay, something's wrong. I'm not very good at kind of hiding this sort of thing. So when it comes to performance, if I'm not believing in the material that I'm behind, you know, and that I'm saying, and that's definitely going to happen when you've been doing it like double, triple figure number of times, then I'm going to just feel like, okay, I don't believe this, so these people are definitely not going to believe it.
Now, there's a different challenge to making magic live the first time, though. So this is the improv part of the conversation, because I found there are some keys. You've mentioned a few already. Collaborators are great for me, but there's also this schedule. So when I book a podcast like this, I was like, I have to show up. You're showing up. We're doing this now. There's no like, oh, I'll do it later when I figure out. So that part of accountability helps put structure around it and make sure that I go. But there's also this part where you have to let go of it. And I think people struggle with that balance. They either try to control too much of it and create too much accountability and structure and make sure they don't fail, or they just think that inspiration or something is going to come to them, and that it doesn't really work that way. You have to have some sort of structure or input in my mind to get to something to lean on or to push off of in order to create the magic. Can you tell us a little bit about how you perform best or what you found works for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like with improv as like the form, there's like a lot of rules, which, you know, I exist to try and get people, especially at the beginning level, to try and have some sort of common language way of being that'll just help make things a bit easier at the start. Because, you know, if you just go into a situation, there's a lot of very simple things that are just going to make it incredibly difficult. And so that's a nice place to start. And, you know, and of course, as time goes on, you start to sort of realize that those rules aren't always strictly applicable to particular situations. But, you know, it's like, it's almost like as if you need to, like with any sort of form, I think you've got to master the, you know, the core and the foundation before you can start kind of messing with it and taking it in different directions. But with stand-up as well, it's kind of like, a lot of what I will do, and especially with my material, is I do have prepared parts and bits and that I've worked on and things like this. But I do tend to find that I won't actually start writing things down in detail until they've been performed many, many, many times. Because not only do I need to kind of like get that feel from stage time and like knowing how a crowd responds to something and getting that, you know, also my own delivery, it's the fact that I'm not the best person at writing down how I talk, how I actually am, and how I sort of my little, like, natural tics and things like this. And it's amazing, actually. I think something which is an exercise I think is always interesting for someone to do is like a conversation like this, like how we're talking now. If you were to take like a transcription tool or something that actually took those words, wrote them all down and look at it back, you would look at it and just think, my God, it's just like this most nonsensical garbage stream of consciousness. Like, how could anyone be listening to this? But you listen back to it actually being said and you think like, oh yeah, I get it. I get the progression, I get the vibe, I get the emphasis on the words. And so I tend to find that I need to kind of find all of those, that tone, the timing and everything like that, and then transfer it to the page. Because if I try to do it the other way around, then I just, yeah, I create robotic wooden things which have no sort of relation to me, myself.
Yeah, I can relate to that too, because even with podcasts or webinars and things that I do and speeches, it's a lot easier to put the speech into an AI tool and have it write the title and description and the bullet points than it is to like get the title and descriptions and then write the speech around it. I always find that that's tough. On this show, like, I kept the intro pretty short. We're just going to introduce who you are and what you do, and then we'll find out afterwards what we talked about and what the plan is.
Yeah, exactly. It's really nice.
And it depends on what you're going for. So I don't want to knock it too much. There are people that can have the discipline and the insights and the detail to really craft something amazing. Okay. And there are people that do, I talk to artists and other things that they spend years building like a sculpture or something. And you have to kind of have this vision in your mind to be really clear up front about what you're building, because you can't just waste a ton of material and time.
Yeah.
And I admire the heck out of that creativity. Yeah. But I do think there's something special about making the magic, doing it live, and then figuring it out afterwards.
Yeah.
That sometimes you just can't force fun. It's like a New Year's Eve or a wedding reception when you're like, okay, you know, now we're going to have the best day of our life. And it just, with play, it doesn't work sometimes. So
it's so true.
I guess my last question for you would be on that, and then we'll play a game and have some fun, get out of here. But how do you avoid that in an improv session where, you know, people are saying, like, you know, at a stand-up coming in, all right, be funny, people, or all right, now's the time to do that. Do you try to keep that out of your head and out of the audience, or have you found a way to leverage that for good?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I've even people who have my sort of, kind of personality type, I'd see different ways in which they do this. And for me, a lot of it actually comes in that no matter where I am on a bill, no matter what's going on, I love to kind of like be amongst the audience. I love that little thing of kind of like looking out there, trying to get a feel for who's there, what sort of, you know, group we're going to have, what sort of vibe, get an advanced feeling about it. Because, you know, so many things can be factors into it, like whether you've got like a younger crowd, an older crowd, the night of the week, you know, weekend crowds are going to be rowdier than ones on weekdays. The city, the location, all of these things can really make a difference to what that kind of feels. And I feel like what this does for me is it helps me kind of get a mental context, because, you know, I know that how important that first moment or those first like 10 seconds really are in those, you know, that the judgment that happens on there is so powerful that if you really do well in those first 10 seconds, you can kind of like ride that and do like bad material and it'll be okay for a while. Whereas if you completely lose them in that first 10 seconds, it's like almost an impossible mountain to get back, to get their, to get them back on side. So I feel like if I can kind of like get that thing, get that feel for it, really feel like we're the someone who is the more up for it or whatever it is. And I'm almost like, I'm going to play more for them, you know, like in my head, I like got like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, you're my person and I'm going to, you know, this is coming for you. And I just kind of go for it. And, usually you have a good read and it's like, you get that person who's on board. And then I'm just, you know, then I'm more comfortable with like, you know, being more engaged with the audience, because I feel like once you've got that, you're into your flow and everyone's.
Yeah, that's so good. It's like, you know, where it's going. Once you get them, it's great. I love those tips there, because what I heard is really the way I approach it too. You got to meet them where they are first and then bring them to where you want them to go. Yeah. And we got to understand like the current situation, read the room and the audience and adapt to that. And then you got some surprises and you can start leading and bring them along. In karaoke, it was always my favorite, like, especially when it was a crowd that maybe didn't know what was happening or we're just starting a show, and I could start mellow and do easy, you know, sing along stuff, you know, Elton John, Billy Joel, that kind of stuff, Jimmy Buffett. Yeah. But I knew like there's going to be this moment, especially on Saturday nights with big crowds, where like it's going to get crazy and it's going to be a Bohemian Rhapsody level moment that's different, or a dance like a cha-cha slide or something where we're going to get 200 people doing something fun together. But you can't start there. You can't start with like Prince P Control or other songs. Like, you can't open with that at 9 o'clock. That's a after midnight on New Year's Eve that song, you know. All right, are you ready to play a game?
I am. Yeah, let's go.
Here we go. It's time for Survey Says. I have some survey questions here. Oh, we asked 100 people a question. If you get one of the top answers here on 2 out of 3, you win the game. Let's start with something that is the opposite of what we do. Name an activity during which you might get bored or sleepy.
Work.
Ooh, work is in there. We'll give that number 5 answer. Only 5 points. Oh, man. Movie, reading, a sporting event. People must be. That's code for.
There you go.
From Wales, I shouldn't say that. and a board game or church. All right, question number 2. Name something a woman should do if she wants to find a man to marry.
Get other interests.
Ooh, I like that. I don't know if I can give it to you, though. This is going to be your first strike. We have be honest or real, be single and date.
It's clear.
Lose weight, cook, dress nicely, internet dating, and go to bars. Some of those feel a little sexist to me. I didn't come up with that. It's on the cards. Okay. Last one. Let's go with a more respectful question here. Name a way in which people show respect for their elders.
Visiting them.
Yeah, there you go. Number one answer, 35 points. Damn, we end on a win. And you win the rights to a free 30-second commercial here. How can we help you, or how can you help us? The website is stephenmorgan.wales, a stand-up comedian and improv actor. Stephen, how can you help us?
You know what? Because I'm guessing that we're going to have people mostly not living in the Netherlands here. I would just say, just like, you know, go out there, subscribe to every single social media channel that I have and just go through my entire history and backlog and just like every single thing and share it and send it to at least 16, perhaps 17 of your friends. And also in the message you send to your friends, say something along the lines of, you know, this, if you don't forward this to another 16 people, you'll have bad luck for 16 years. Some sort of viral thing that'll, you know, old school internet that'll make other
chain letters. But bust out an old good 1980s chain letter.
It's been a while.
In an email, you'll curse, your family will die if you don't forward Steven's social media channels to at least 16 friends. It's like the ring.
I think that'll work. Yes, exactly. Yeah, add that to the message.
You nailed it. I'm wondering, one last trivia question for you. What do you think is said more in our society of 8 billion people? You're on mute or like and subscribe?
I think if it was 5 years ago, it'd be for the like and subscribe. But now I think it's you're on mute.
All right, good. I think it's you're on mute too. That's the way I would go. All right, we'll put you on mute, Stephen, and we'll see you next time. If you're looking for more information on Playful Humans, you can go to playfulhumans.com. Again, take the quiz, like and subscribe to the show, share it with somebody that you think needs to hear it. I think that's the best way to go there. And if you have any suggestions for future guests or topics you want us to cover, you can reach out to me too. It's mike@playfulhumans.com. Until next time, if you can't be good, be good at it. We'll see ya. Bye, everybody. Don't wait for tomorrow.